provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenos, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about M&A insights in CW 930. Frenos is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into the most critical M&A trends and insights we've seen across LinkedIn over the past 2 weeks. The M&A landscape is incredibly dynamic right now, showing a fascinating balance between traditional consolidation plays and truly forward-leaning strategies across a wide array of industries.
That's right. And for you, our listener, we're going to try and unpack what's truly most important. From strategic takeovers like Marriott International expanding its luxury footprint to rumors of Tata Motors reportedly eyeing a $4 billion acquisition of an Italian EV manufacturer,
yeah,
and broader shifts in leadership and product expansions. This deep dive is really designed to give you that shortcut to being well-informed.
Yeah, hopefully with those surprising facts and just enough maybe humor to keep you hooked.
Yeah.
So let's unpack this. Our sources this week really underscore just how dynamic M&A activity is. What's particularly fascinating from my perspective is the sheer breadth of industries and the sheer variety of deals being discussed. It's not just one sector dominating, is it?
No, not at all. Indeed. When we look at overall activity, the numbers are quite compelling. Dirk Sommer shared some really eye-opening data. SaaS M&A hit record highs in Q2 2025 with 637 tracked deals.
Wow, 637.
Yeah, that's a 29% increase year over year. What's crucial here, though, is that while valuations held steady, there's a significant spread. This tells us the market is increasingly emphasizing strong fundamentals like, efficient growth and strong customer retention.
Right, rather than just raw scale.
Exactly.
That's a huge jump. And it really speaks to a maturation in the SaaS space, doesn't it?
It really does.
And it's not just the big SaaS players making waves. Scott Weevil reported that disclosed startup M&A actually exceeded $100 billion in the first half of 2025.
$100 billion.
Yeah, a staggering 155% increase from last year.
Wow.
He noted a clear focus on strategic fit over just acquiring for scale. For many venture-backed companies, M&A is increasingly becoming their next round, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. The new funding round or the exit path.
Right. And Peter Walker echoed this sentiment, even suggesting that 2025 could turn out to be the best year ever for startup acquisitions,
mm-hmm,
potentially eclipsing 2023 and 2024.
Interesting. And it's not just the usual tech suspects either. Leonid Bashlikov highlighted a significant trend in the crypto space, noting over 1,000 M&A deals since 2020.
1,000 deals in crypto.
Yeah, it really signals a maturation of that industry, a shift from pure hype to more pragmatic, regulated transactions,
Makes sense.
Then in a completely different realm, Keith Benders shared that M&A in the creator economy surged by 73% in the first half of 2025. And significantly, non-endemic buyers companies outside of traditional creator platforms are now actively entering that space.
That's a powerful indication of where value is being seen, isn't it? New players coming in. We're also seeing unique drivers in more traditional sectors. Brooks Crankshaw detailed a significant uptick in HVAC industry M&A.
Oh, yeah. What's driving that?
Driven by strategic buyers, a strong focus on acquiring talent, and regulatory changes, even despite some tariff impacts, apparently.
Gotcha. Talent and regs.
And the advisory landscape continues its reshape, with John Orsini pointing out that registered investment advisors, or RIAs, continue to drive much of the M&A activity there.
Right, that consolidation continues.
And what's also fascinating, Kimberly Edelston shared research on this, is that family business mergers actually tend to enjoy greater harmony and often better financial performance than non-family deals.
Huh. That's interesting. Maybe that shared value system helps.
Could be. It suggests there's a unique dynamic there anyway.
Indeed, the family aspect adds a layer. Broadening our scope, Tom Goldblatt presented some compelling shifts in middle market M&A. Things like PE-backed IPO dominance, so more private equity-backed companies going public and ballooning exit inventories.
Suggesting more companies are maybe ready to be sold or needing to be sold.
Right. And Matthew Hamery, looking at the grocery sector, emphasized that grocers absolutely need a clear M&A strategy. Doesn't matter if they're buying or selling.
Why is that?
Well, to navigate industry changes. He cites reasons ranging from funding major initiatives to simply adding new capabilities. You can't stand still.
No, you really can't.
Yeah.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting and potentially disruptive for traditional M&A. Thomas Smale and Indubizi Ikekwe described a new trend in big tech, what they call reverse acquihires, or even dismembering startups.
Reverse acquihires, dismembering, what does that mean exactly?
Well, think about this. Instead of a full acquisition, companies like Google are apparently just hiring key teams and licensing specific technology, especially in the intense AI race.
Ah, so grabbing the people and the IP.
Yeah.
Exactly. It allows them to gain crucial human capital and intellectual property, but crucially, they avoid the regulatory baggage and complexities of a full acquisition.
It's a strategic workaround, then, bypassing traditional M&A.
In some cases, yeah. Very surgical.
That's a fundamental shift in how large companies acquire talent and tech. Very clever. And we see broader strategic moves, too. Britton Ladd, for example, made a compelling argument for PepsiCo to actually split into two separate companies to unlock shareholder value.
Right, that's a big structural change.
Definitely. And Marcus Wagner highlighted Salesforce's precise M&A strategy, where they acquire vertical control points like ExactTarget for marketing automation or MuleSoft for integration. This strategy has basically transformed Salesforce from just a vendor into a foundational infrastructure provider for businesses.
Yeah, becoming part of the plumbing.
Exactly. It really points to a deeper focus on strategic, synergistic value rather than just chasing deal volume.
Absolutely. It's about strategic intelligence over sheer size.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Tom Platz noted that while direct M&A in Singapore might have seen a lull, cross-border transactions involving Singapore as a strategic deal hub remain incredibly strong.
So it's still that gateway.
Yeah. Still a key hub for deals into and out of Asia. However, a survey by Kai Hesselman revealed mixed perceptions in the small and mid-cap M&A market.
Mixed how?
Well, some see more deals flowing, while others perceive an emptier market.
Huh. So uncertainty is still playing a role.
It really reflects the underlying economic uncertainty that's still impacting valuations and buyer confidence, I think.
Okay, so we've painted a picture of a bustling, evolving M&A landscape. Lots going on. But for many, the headlines are just the tip of the iceberg. The real challenge, and where most value is won or lost, lies in the meticulous dance of the deal itself.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's shift our focus now to the crucial steps of the M&A process, maybe starting long before any signatures are dry.
It's absolutely critical, isn't it? Lindsay M. Windler really stressed the importance of proactive seller diligence before even receiving a letter of intent.
Getting your house in order early.
Exactly. Getting ahead of the game, anticipating buyer checklists, addressing any HR or compliance gaps, cleaning up contracts. This kind of prep enhances transparency, builds buyer confidence, and ultimately strengthens the deal value.
Makes perfect sense.
Bruce Eckfeldt added to this, stating that successful exits often hinge on what he calls operational independence. Can your business truly maintain momentum without your constant personal attention?
Oof, that's a tough question for a lot of founders.
It is, and Christopher Jones shared a hard truth.
Hmm.
Many deals die, not because the business itself is bad, but because common deal killers like messy financials or founder dependency weren't fixed early enough.
Those are the silent assassins of M&A, as he put it. Things that could have been addressed.
Yeah, preventable issues.
That's a truly crucial point for any founder or owner. Sri Maladi, from the seller's perspective, makes a strong case for investing in a quality of earnings report, a QOE, as a vital step.
Right, that independent look at the financials.
Yeah, for those unfamiliar, that's essentially a rigorous, independent deep dive into a company's financial health, adjusting for any non-recurring items or accounting quirks to give potential buyers a true, sustainable picture of profitability.
It's about building undeniable trust, really.
Absolutely. And on a broader cultural note, Joe Lewin highlighted a fascinating difference. In the UK, talking about selling a company is often seen as, well, taboo.
Really? Still?
Apparently so. Whereas in the US, there's a strong build-to-sell mentality. This cultural gap, he argues, leads to many founders in the UK leaving significant money on the table due to a lack of understanding of the M&A process.
That cultural divide is really insightful. It's amazing how that can impact outcomes. And it connects directly to Oliver Bogner's point that most of the money is actually made before the LOI, the letter of intent. Through proper preparation, a strong go-to-market story, identifying many qualified buyers, and crucially, creating competition among them. That's where the leverage comes from.
Right, setting the stage properly.
Exactly. And speaking of the LOI, Johannes Riedel and Jay Yeung both warned startup founders about its critical importance. They noted that the real negotiation often starts even earlier, maybe in the term sheet phase, where initial leverage can easily be lost if you're not careful.
Yeah, those early documents set the tone. Doris Kirsten provided an excellent detailed breakdown of the letter of intent itself. He underscored its non-binding nature but important moral obligation. His advice for sellers is clear. Define as many terms as possible upfront.
Like what sort of terms?
Things like working capital adjustments, the exact purchase price structure. And vitally, push for the shortest exclusivity period possible, ideally 30 to 45 days.
To keep your options open.
To maintain your negotiation power and keep other interested parties potentially engaged. Don't get locked up too long.
Makes sense. Beyond the LOI, the devil's often in the financial details, right? Brett Rosenstein outlined key tax considerations for buyers.
Always crucial.
Yeah, like the implications of asset versus stock purchases, how the purchase price will be allocated, the treatment of goodwill, you know, the value of intangible assets, and of course, potential unknown tax liabilities.
Things that can bite you later.
Definitely. David Bloy added that the deal structure itself, not just the headline valuation, is what truly defines real success.
So it's not just the price tag.
No, it's about aligning incentives, managing risk, and ensuring continuity long after the papers are signed, how the deal actually works.
Right. And once you're in the thick of a competitive acquisition process, Tulahunter Demi pointed out that buyers without clear governance frameworks are already at a disadvantage.
What does that mean, governance frameworks?
Basically, having pre-approved criteria for the deal and an accountable leader who can make decisive actions swiftly, you can't be figuring out your approval process mid-battle.
Ah, okay. Be ready to move.
Exactly. And Pat Linden perfectly encapsulated the required mindset for closing deals. He said it's not about motivation or adrenaline.
Surprisingly, maybe.
Yeah, but about relentless grit and discipline to navigate pressure and ambiguity. It's an endurance game, he says.
Right. Absolutely an endurance game. That resonates. Dharmendra Singh highlighted the immense importance of strategic target screening in M&A.
Doing your homework up front.
Yeah, stressing that success really begins long before the deal is signed by asking the right questions and identifying the ideal targets from the outset. Don't waste time on bad fits.
Good point. Yeah. And Arnson Adela succinctly described the acquisition process as having a distinct rhythm.
A rhythm.
Yeah, it starts with meticulous sourcing and underwriting, then moves into intense negotiation and the purchase agreement phase. But throughout it all, the focus must always be on alignment between the parties. Keeping everyone on the same page.
Alignment. Key word there. Okay, so let's say the deal is signed. Champagne corks pop.
Momentarily. Yeah.
Because then the true test begins. Successful post-merger integration, or PMI.
Ah, yes, PMI.
This is, without exaggeration, where value is either unlocked or unfortunately often lost.
Precisely. Amy Hacker underscored that post-M&A success hinges on a powerful trifecta. Purpose, people, and planning.
Purpose, people, planning.
Right. It's never just about the deal itself. Nick Curum added that improving decision velocity and clarity after the deal is signed actually enhances value far more than simply adding more data dashboards.
Faster, clearer decisions beat more charts.
Exactly. He shared an example of an energy firm that achieved significant synergies by fundamentally streamlining their decision-making processes, getting faster and smarter.
That makes so much sense. It's about actionable insights, not just data overload. And here's a surprising truth Mawash Ali revealed. Millions of dollars can quietly leak out of deals due to unmanaged supplier contracts.
How?
From things like auto renewals you weren't aware of to missed renegotiation windows. She outlined how a unified supplier repository and streamlined agreements can be a game changer, preventing these stranded costs.
Wow, that's easily overlooked, I bet.
Very easily.
Yeah.
And Chris McCarthy emphasized that seamless technology integration is absolutely critical for M&A success.
Of course, the IT side.
Yeah, from the initial due diligence all the way through optimizing post-merger processes to minimize disruptions for everyone involved, employees, customers.
Yeah, huge potential for friction there. Alexis Chevalier's insights confirm this, showing a stark reality. 83% of underperforming deals lacked formal synergy tracking.
83%.
Yeah. It really stresses the need for clear ownership, accountable work streams, and a focused integration management office, an IMO.
Someone needs to own those synergy targets.
Absolutely. And Monsef Tanfor reinforced that there's no one-size-fits-all PMI playbook. Integration, he argues, must be deeply tailored to the deal's unique strategic rationale and its core value creation logic.
So copy-pasting doesn't work?
No. It needs to be treated as a profound change program for both companies, not just a checklist exercise.
That's a complex undertaking, then. David Bassett pointed out the inherent challenges in aligning and consolidating business capabilities post-merger.
What kind of challenges?
Well, differing definitions of what a capability even is, different ownership structures. It can add immense confusion rather than clarity without a crystal clear approach.
Right, getting everyone speaking the same language.
Exactly. And Prasha Munjal, in his detailed breakdown of the M&A deal lifecycle, highlighted that value creation through PMI and synergy capture is often the most underrated phase.
Everyone focuses on closing.
Right, but the real work starts after. And that's where the value promise is either kept or broken.
And the data really paints a stark picture of how difficult this is. David Kavanaugh referenced research by professors Baruch Lev and Feng Gu, finding that a staggering 70-75% of M&A deals fail to deliver their intended value.
Three quarters, basically. That's brutal.
It is. And this often comes down to factors like a lack of strategic fit, which should have been caught earlier, or misaligned incentives between the merging entities.
Yeah.
And Martin Slezak, quoting none other than Warren Buffett, offered a powerful warning. Acquisitions are like a marriage.
Ah, the marriage analogy.
Yeah. Yes. They start with a joyful wedding, but reality often diverges sharply from expectations. He urges strategic rigor over romanticism, especially crucial in the pharmaceutical industry where these deals are massive.
That marriage analogy is so powerful and rings true, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's easy to get caught up in the excitement.
Very easy.
Rosanna Krug offered a candid look at the realities of M&As, emphasizing that ultimate success comes down to three things: speed, strong leadership, and above all, a people-first execution.
Speed, leadership, people.
Yeah. This means skillfully navigating challenges from employee retention, which is huge.
Always a risk.
To overhauling legacy systems. Neil McNamara, citing McKinsey, echoed this sentiment, stating that disciplined integration is truly a must-have skill, and M&A should always be treated as a strategic tool, not just a quick fix for underlying problems.
Right, it's not a band-aid. It's a core competency if you're going to do it often.
Precisely.
And Michael Hofer also proposed an intriguing strategic shift, using M&A for cost transformation, not just growth.
Interesting. Using M&A to get leaner.
Yeah, leveraging acquisitions to offload non-essential functions, reconfigure bloated costs, and build a leaner business model. It's a different way to think about value creation through deals.
That is a different angle.
And Yohan D shared valuable lessons from a successful 18-month integration project, powerfully reinforcing how critical teamwork and detailed strategy execution are in actually achieving the value you set out for. It takes time and effort.
18 months. Yeah, that underlines the endurance needed.
Absolutely. Okay, finally, let's explore one of the most significant forces reshaping M&A right now. Artificial intelligence.
AI. Can't avoid it.
You really can't. It's far more than just a buzzword. It's becoming a truly practical, powerful tool that is changing how deals are structured, executed, and integrated.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for anyone in the M&A space. Amit Sarkar shared that AI tools are fundamentally empowering M&A advisory firms.
How so?
Boosting their efficiency and significantly enhancing the deliverables they provide. It's genuinely reshaping the entire M&A advisory landscape, he suggests.
Better analysis. Faster.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
Glenn Kerbin and Jessica DiStefano highlighted how AI streamlines crucial post-deal work. Things like data transfer and those exhaustive redundancy checks.
Oh, that integration grunt work?
Yeah, this significantly cuts down both time and effort, especially for large financial firms dealing with massive data sets.
That's a true game changer for accelerating integration, potentially saving millions.
Absolutely.
Dr. Ralph Ubronigal revealed that PwC Deals has strategically partnered with Harvey AI, which brings cutting-edge generative AI technology directly into the M&A process.
PwC and Harvey AI.
Okay, yeah. This means AI-powered due diligence workflows and incredibly secure data room reviews, leading to reduced time to insight for clients, enhanced deal comfort, and potentially a real competitive edge for private equity investors using them.
It's incredible to think how much faster and deeper that due diligence can go now. Almost scary.
It is. But Frank Akula pointed out a crucial caveat here.
Which is?
While AI certainly gives acquirers an unprecedentedly comprehensive understanding of targets, human oversight remains absolutely crucial.
Right. The human in the loop.
Exactly. You still need human intelligence to properly prompt the AI, to interpret the data it provides, and critically to avoid any inherent biases that might exist within the programs themselves.
So it's about augmenting human intelligence, not simply replacing it.
That seems to be the consensus, yeah. This profound shift extends into the legal sector as well. Tariq Sheikh framed Big Law at a historic crossroads. They're choosing between mega mergers for global dominance or leaning into AI-driven agility.
Scale versus smarts, almost.
Sort of. He suggests a hybrid future where successful firms will leverage global scale while deeply embedding AI into their operations to fundamentally redefine legal efficiency and client expectations.
So both. That makes sense. It really is a transformative moment across the board, isn't it?
It really feels like it.
Well, that brings us towards the end. If you enjoyed this deep dive, new episodes drop every 2 weeks, bringing you the latest insights from across the business world. Also, make sure to check out our other editions focusing on private equity, venture capital, and strategy and consulting.
And maybe something to think about as you reflect on this. Consider how truly exit-ready a business is if its success relies more on external market conditions or maybe acquisition hype rather than its internal operational independence and the deliberate human-centric integration of its core assets. What hidden strengths or overlooked vulnerabilities might that reveal in your own M&A strategy or perhaps the strategy of companies you advise or invest in?
That's a great question to ponder. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.
And remember to subscribe so you don't miss our next episode.